on the AM and FM 107 Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning...
We don't have time for that today. The show is too cram-packed, two amazing, great interviews because two great entrepreneurs are with us. Welcome to School for Startups Radio. Thank you so much for being with us. As I said, the show is cram-packed. Dustin Howes is with us. He is Mr. Affiliate Marketing, one of the top affiliate marketers in the world. We haven't talked about that much recently, so we need to. And then Melissa Shackelford is with us to talk about marketing and harnessing your purpose, client acquisition. Great interview with her as well. We're going to get started. Here we go. Very excited to introduce another great guest. Please welcome Dustin Howes to the show. He is ex-military, ex-professional poker player, and now full-time affiliate marketer. He is probably the number one in the affiliate space and has been doing it for 15 years. Dustin, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hey, thanks for having me, Jim. I'm doing great. Thank you, sir.
All right. For those who don't understand, don't know, if define affiliate marketing, please.
You get it. You're an e-com store owner or business owner, and you're looking for more traffic. There are publications out there that have traffic with your type of audience that are in need of sending that traffic to somewhere where they can earn a commission for sending sales your way. And that's what affiliate marketing is. It is, you have brands, you have networks, and you have publications, and they're all working in conjunction so that publications can earn commissions for sending sales to those brands.
All right. Does it only work with physical products? What about learning systems and things like that?
Oh, this works on many different applications. So a true affiliate program is essentially defined by links, but there are many ways you can do this. There are many different verticals. E-commerce was the original, but online courses is great. You can do app downloads. You can do services. There's a wide variety of products online that have affiliate programs.
What's the craziest thing that you've run across?
In terms of affiliate program, I would say app downloads was pretty new to the industry about 5 years ago. And it is growing exponentially. It's a different ball game. A lot of affiliate marketing is attribution based. So we're trying to pay publishers and influencers for bringing in sales traditionally, but apps are a different breed. They're taking leads. They just want people to sign up for their app or a freemium app. And so that concept has blown up pretty big over the last few years.
And what about AI? So if I want to find out the best rifle casing for this gun that I have, I don't even know what that means, a rifle casing. Maybe that doesn't exist. I want to buy a new handle for my rifle. And I go online, and now I go on AI and ask AI, what do you recommend for my gun? Because I've already talked to AI once or twice about my gun, so it already knows about it a little bit.
Sure.
And it recommends something. Where do we get the affiliate capture in here?
A good question. So large language models, LLMs for short, your Claudes and your ChatGPTs, they are pulling in information from all over the internet. And there are certain publications that are looking for those best answers. And today, ChatGPT doesn't know how to monetize that, and they're not helping the publications monetize it. However, they are getting information coming from these websites and people, and that often authority essentially leads towards more leads and sales in the long run. But as of right now, LLMs, to my knowledge, are not utilizing affiliate links yet, but I think that is coming in the future.
I think we should just sit down with some whiskey until we figure it out. Last man standing.
I'll do it if you're on for bourbon.
Okay, yeah, we can do bourbon. That'd be fine too. Yes.
Excellent.
All right. But seriously, all teasing aside, AI has to figure out how to play in that space here soon.
Oh, I mean, it is a big part of affiliate marketing in terms of trying to rank for some of the best publications right now are trying actively to rank for LLMs rather than for Google right now. But Google is still paying the bills. How long until it transitions and who's going to get credit is still up to interpretation. And hopefully there's a medium place where the LLM themselves can make some commissions and also pass that down to the original creator of the content. But right now it's essentially just swiping what they think is the most knowledgeable answers and giving that information to the end user.
All right. So I am a football gambling site and have very good customer loyalty and time on site and all of that. And I come to you, what would you say, help hook me up? What kind of deals can I get? How much money should I be able to make from it? How many partnerships should I have? What's an ideal Dustin approved affiliate package look like for my quasi legal gambling business? Totally legal gambling business.
Okay. As long as it's totally legal, we're okay.
In all 57 states.
Yeah, 57. That's incredible. I didn't know we acquired seven more. That's wild. All right. So we've got your gambling site, and we are going to start off and decide, okay, we want to make an affiliate program. But before you do that, we want to make sure that our on-page conversion rate optimization is to the standards that we need it to be. The last thing we want to do is create an affiliate program for a website that doesn't convert sales. So we're going to make sure that our startup business is actually converting those sales when people hit that website. And once we're in a good place in that section, now we start planning the affiliate program. And that starts off with checking out your competitors and seeing what they are doing with their affiliate program. Is it a profitable affiliate program? Go and check out the footer of any of their websites and see if they have an affiliate program. And if it's working for them, go sign up for it. See what they're sending out to the people that are signing up for their program and emulate the good stuff and toss out the bad stuff. And we're going to find out things like, how much are they paying in commissions? Can we match that financially? Or do we have to create some kind of new incentive or better incentive to bring the partners that they're partnering with over into our program? And once we do that, then we're going to look for ideal, what we call partner personas. And those partner personas are influencers, publications, and content. They could be coupon sites. I don't really go that route too often, but they're there to capture last click attribution. And these partners, you're going to have to decide, hey, who do we want to work with? Who's at the top of my list and top priority? How do we get a hold of them? How do we find them? And how do we reach out to get their interest into joining our affiliate program? So those are the first things that you're going to think about when you're creating an affiliate program.
All right. Some great information there. And I have some follow-up questions. Before that, though, I just want to tell you my experience, audience. I wanted to get in front of an influencer, and I still may use this particular person. I had an idea and it made a lot of sense. I wanted Vanilla Ice. Okay. Don't judge me. It made sense. Okay. Quit teasing, quit laughing at me. It made sense for the time. Are you laughing at me, Dustin?
Oh no, I'm laughing with you here, Jim.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. But I really wanted Vanilla Ice because of the song Ice Ice Baby and all of that, which has great entrepreneurial overtones, by the way. And so I got in touch with him through IMDb Pro, which is what you pay per monthly. I think it was like $29 a month, and you can get in touch with their agents. Agents are all listed. I got in touch with him. It was only $5,000 for him to write a foreword to my book, which I still haven't written yet. So,
okay. Interesting choice. Why did you end up going with him rather than anybody else? Why is that the first guy that came to your mind for your book?
The book is 14 songs that create perfect elevator pitches or value propositions. So each of these songs is a perfect template for a great elevator pitch, depending on the product and all of that kind of stuff. And the number one best song ever is number 14 on our list, and it is Ice Ice Baby.
All right.
The lyrics are just so entrepreneurial when you get into it. Almost every verse has an entrepreneurial overtone. And
yes,
so we wanted it to be memorable. And, you know, we had a lot of other people. We had Johnny Cash and Billy Joel and Kanye and Diddy. And I don't know, I'll have to kick Diddy out now. I won't be able to use Diddy in public anymore.
Unfortunate. I often, when the first calls I get on with influencers, I often stop, I collaborate, and I listen. So I understand the lyrics,
there's the
how they wrap in there.
Stop, collaborate, and listen. Yeah, so.
Absolutely.
So how do you get the influencers online? But more importantly, how are you not afraid that they're just not poorly managed or not managed at all and are going to end up causing you more pain than ROI?
Yeah, great question. First off, it's targeting and deciding whether or not this is going to be a fit for your brand. And then the partnership starts with asking them a simple question in your outreach. Do you think this product is a good fit for your audience? Or do you think your audience would be interested in a product like this? Do you want to test this product out yourself and maybe share it with your audience if you like it? Something in that nature, and getting a response back from them to make sure that they're interested, is the first step to this. Because if you just try to jam something down their throat and force them into a sponsorship that they're not interested in, it's not going to make good content altogether. Even if they do make the content, it won't be the kind of content that you're looking for. So we want to start in a place of trust, setting the expectations, creating some kind of media kit guidelines for promoting the product and sharing it with them so that the collaboration orders are essentially in place and they have a clear vision of utilizing their creativity, but staying within your company and brand guidelines to make that content a winner.
You said my site needed to have a certain sales conversion rate, or we should, if it's not this rate, we shouldn't even bother. You're not ready yet. What number is that? Can you help us with that? Was it 2%, 20%, 200%?
That's impossible to answer without, you know, just overly generalizing something.
Every site, we appreciate overgeneralizations.
Okay. It definitely, it matters what the product is, what the average order value is, the excitement level for an influencer, and to be able to sell that. Some products have a 50% conversion rate. Some have a negative conversion rate. Like it's a wide range. But if you're an e-commerce site, generally you're looking at a 2% for $100 average order value of some rates. And if you're converting at a 5%, you're winning in that campaign. But there's just such a wide range depending on what the product is. And the only real test is, like, is it over 1%? Then we can start considering having an affiliate program for this product.
Okay. And the influencer, what kind of deal are they looking for? What percent are they going to demand typically, and what do you negotiate them down to and stuff like that? And obviously it depends on how big the influencer is, but give us some guidance there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, their followership is a big component of it, but it is not the absolute component. You'll find what we call micro influencers that have anywhere between 1,000 and 50,000 followers that are going to generate more sales than somebody with a million followers. It just depends on how engaged they are with their audience and what their audience does with the things that they are promoting. So engagement rate, there are some tools out there that can show you what kind of engagement rates and what kind of followers are real and what kind of followers are fake. There are a lot of influencers out there who will try to puff up their numbers just to get more sponsorships. Now, the guys that have below 50,000 followers, they're not in a place where they can demand a sponsorship of upfront money to make the content. They're in a place where they're going to have to create good content and work off of affiliate and commission level. And those are the guys that you really want to work with, especially early on in your campaigns for influencers and affiliate. And once you get a good taste of what those micro influencers are doing, what they're saying to their audience that is working and helping out your conversion rates, then we can start working with the bigger influencers and start marketing creating a sponsorship budget, because those influencers are going to ask for upfront money to review products and to use them and share it with their audience. And that's just the nature of the beast. But work with the micro influencers first, hone in that message before we start working with the bigger guys.
Okay. Should I expect on $100,000 for a micro influencer? Is that still a micro enough?
It could be. Nomenclature of it. 100,000 for an influencer. Do you mean in dollars or in followers?
In dollars. Me to pay them for a micro influencer. Again, these have under 50,000, but I understand that they have a very particular niche. For example, you know, that's why they're successful. So I understand the niche part.
Oh yeah, sure thing. So maybe think in terms of $100 per 10,000 followers above 50,000 followers. That's a good metric to start with. So if they have 100,000 followers, I would be willing to test out something, some kind of campaign for $500, essentially. And the bigger that is, the more expensive it's going to be. $5,000 for a million followers is something I'd be very comfortable with. Now, these influencers know their numbers and know their audience and know what they can expect from a sponsorship and what they're worth. So everybody's prices are going to be a little bit different, but in general, I just thinking that number is of $100 per 10,000. After 50,000.
And have we peaked silliness in that space, Dustin? For those of us who are outside and kind of looking in and saying, okay, you're giving $25,000 to this 16-year-old that no one over 16 in America has heard of, you know, we go, you're an idiot, you know? Have we reached peak silliness?
I think marketers are smarter today than they ever have been. Tracking attribution is we have more capability of tracking what those influencers are driving in incrementality. So as long as you have a link in place or some kind of vanity code that you can track back the sale came from this influencer, you can make much more informed decisions than you could 10 years ago. So I think it isn't our peak of insanity we're over the hump without a doubt. And now educating marketers to making the educated decisions in that sense is still an uphill battle, but it is getting better by the day.
All right. And assuming that I have good site, good usership, what kind of revenue bump could I get from an affiliate program?
Great question.
30%?
Yeah, not overnight. Affiliate programs are not like Facebook ads, Meta ads, Google ads. You cannot just turn them on and they work. Affiliate programs are built to be a slow burn, especially in your first year. So what you're doing in the first 3 months is program setup, recruitment of affiliate partners, and you're looking for a proof of life that influencer and content marketing from publications is going to be a good fit for your brand. And when we get that proof of life after 3 months, now we're looking at the next level is 6 months. We're trying to drive sales and get more from the affiliates that are driving this content, and we're trying to get them into a better conversion spot. So we're testing out with influencers, we're seeing what works, and we're replicating the things that do work and getting rid of the ones that are not working for us, or at least not doing more campaigns with them. Now, at 12 months, if you're doing everything right, if you have somebody dedicated to the affiliate program working anywhere from 10 to 40 hours a week trying to grow this program, you can safely expect to have a 20% boost in revenue coming from this channel than you had in the previous year. And you will have continual success with that program as long as you continue to nurture those relationships over time.
Are there certain categories of products that this works better for, long, higher ticket items versus smaller ticket items, number of touches, clothing versus electronics? What's the sweetest of the sweet spot?
Well, right now, AI is hot. AI affiliate programs are really hot, and they're using the AI tools themselves to go and be an affiliate and become more profitable affiliate marketers. And how they're doing that is they're showcasing how they're using the tool itself for others to use in that same fashion. So AI is killing it with affiliate programs right now. And the conversion rate for those, it can be upwards of 30% in some cases, just depending on how expensive the product is and what kind of utility you can get out of it, because people are trying to be more efficient with their business and their time. They're willing to test something out for a $27 a month product, a subscription of some sort. But in general, like influencers have been in the e-commerce space for a very long time, and the influencers that you see on Instagram and TikTok promoting products, the more unique the product is, the better it's going to sell. Like, I am such a sucker for a good user-generated content piece on Instagram. I will buy anything that I think my kids will enjoy or that I'm going to have fun with. And so I am instantly buying through campaigns constantly on my phone, on Instagram and TikTok. So those kinds of products I've seen do the best, and the tracking technology behind it, you have to choose the right platform to make sure that you're tracking all the attribution back to the influencers that you're working with.
You have a product I've seen a lot. I haven't seen it online. I've only seen it on TikTok videos. Are these exploding packages that you leave for thieves who are going to steal off your Amazon porch? Have you seen those?
I've watched many videos of glitter bombs set up.
So where do we get the actual glitter bomb?
Ooh, I don't know. It's been guys that have built them and they've made videos out of building them and then videos out of people opening them. But I didn't know there was an actual business of somebody making these bombs for you. That's ingenious.
Well, there is now. I'm going to start that. I think that's a great one. The idea of selling exploding things to kids across the country. I love that idea.
Yeah, I think you're in for quite the nightmare in PR, but also it's going to go viral. So it could go both ways. I don't know.
Dustin, how do we find out more, follow you online, affiliate with you?
Absolutely. So I help any company out there that needs help with affiliate marketing. I don't do the work myself, but I point people in the right direction for the services and tools that they need. I do this for free. I take 15 minutes with anybody that needs help and guidance in that sense. Just go to dustinhowes.com/explore. And if you're looking at growing or creating an affiliate program and launching one, go check out dustinhowes.com/checklist, and it'll be a step-by-step process of how to create your affiliate program through your own in-house partnerships.
Awesome. That is quite the giveaway. Thank you. Thanks for being with us, and we'd love to have you back again soon. Thanks a lot, Dustin.
All right. Take care, Jim. Thank you.
We are back, and again, thank you so very much for being with us today. I'm very excited to introduce another great guest. Please welcome Melissa Shackelford to the show. She is a small business growth and marketing consultant. Her company, Shackelford Strategies, helps market and grow your business on perhaps an interim basis. She is also a professional speaker and author, trying to get on stage as much as she can, and has a book out that did very well, 5-star rated, Harnessing Purpose, A Marketer's Guide to Inspiring Connection. I will, of course, have to ask her what the word purpose means. It's too big for me. I don't understand it. So very interesting career. She's also a very active board member in a lot of organizations and gives a lot back to the community as well. Melissa, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Great, Jim. I'm just so excited to be here. I'll tell you, I'm a big fan. I have read your book, School for Startups. So I definitely am excited about our conversation today.
Thank you. That book is so old. Were the pages all dusty and stuff?
No, I did it on Kindle. I'm a Kindle girl. I like to do Kindle or Audible for my books. So I did not get an old wrinkled one from the used bookstore. I definitely bought the brand new Kindle version. I have not read your new book. I know there's a newer book, but Schools for Startups is right up my alley.
Well, great. I appreciate that very, very much. What are some of the things that, you know, when you consult with, so, you know, we have, you know, I do a lot of consulting too. The last person I met with wanted to swing by her office first so she could get me a shirt. And so we swung by her office. Her business doesn't have anything yet, like a strategy or she doesn't even know what it is, but she already has office space and a shirt.
All right. Well,
what are your
thoughts,
Melissa? I'll just open up the stage and let you go for a minute.
So my background is in marketing and growth, primarily healthcare and technology. And when I work with a lot of founders, they think that marketing can be just having a shirt. And that's not really what it's about. Frankly, a lot of founders don't think they need marketing early on. And what I tend to do is work with them and suggest that marketing is critical from day one. And why is it critical from day one? Because like you say in your book, you have to figure out product market fit. You need to know that your customers have a problem that they're willing to pay you to solve that problem. And if it's not a big enough problem, they're not going to buy your product or service. And that's why I always encourage founders to think about marketing or bringing in the marketing talent early on maybe not as your first full-time hire, but as an early hire, so that you can not only find that product market fit, you can figure out who is your ideal customer, figure out what are the personas you're going to sell to, and start to build your brand early on. And I think, I'm sure you see a lot of your guests are focusing on their own personal brands or the brands of their businesses, and hooray for them. I just try to encourage founders, focus on your brand, your personal brand, your company's brand from day one or even day zero. And if you need to make shirts to make you feel good about it, great. But for me, it's more about what is your online presence? How are people going to find you? And what do you stand for?
Okay, I love it. When a business starts out, isn't marketing by definition the first thing they have to do to bring?
Sometimes founders will say, this will just sell itself, because their first couple sales were to their cousin and their friend from high school, and then their cousin's best friend, you know, from college. That's not a product that's going to sell itself. That's selling to the people in your circle. And those, yes, those should be your first couple sales to people you know. But when you go beyond that, things don't typically just sell themselves. They should be thinking about marketing from day one, because they should be thinking about how do they acquire their next several customers. It's that founder that thinks it's just going to sell themselves, or they're going to get word of mouth. Well, word of mouth with your friends and family, that's not word of mouth. You need to facilitate that. You need to do things. You need to focus on your social media, your personal brand, your company's brand. It's exactly what you say. It should be one of your first thoughts is marketing.
Well, I'm just stupid, I guess. I don't even know. When I started my first business, the entire effort I thought was marketing, right? We set up an 800 number so people could call us, and then we made ads, and the ads were really basic, but that's what we could afford. And the ads had people call an 800 number. And Melissa, when we had enough people call the number, we said, well, maybe we should make a brochure to send to them.
Yep.
You know, we hadn't even made a brochure yet. Until we had enough to send it to. What about that strategy?
And that's not dumb. That's super, super smart, because it should be all about client acquisition. And depending on what kind of a startup you are, maybe you throw up your website, maybe you throw it on LinkedIn, maybe you, like you did, you have an 800 number and you place some ads. These days, digital ads are not hard to create on your own. You don't need something super sophisticated, but you were from day one thinking about client acquisition. And so many founders aren't thinking that way. So that's where I really encourage them to think about, they don't necessarily need to hire me. They need to be thinking about marketing and customer acquisition from day one, because particularly those that are going to be looking for venture funding down the road. Well, those venture funds are looking for who are your customers. Do you have repeatable customers? Do you have a flywheel that you are starting to have momentum to get the next customer and the next customer? And your friends and family is not the strategy for that. You need to be doing exactly what you started to do, is have a strategy to focus on customer acquisition that will grow with your company.
Yes. Well, we didn't use that same method forever.
So. Well, and I saw a lot of that. I've seen a lot of that in your book, where I felt that we were philosophically minded, that it is really all about getting customers in the door as you grow, but doing it really deliberately, step by step, and not getting too far ahead of yourself. Because I think we've all seen startups that get too far ahead of themselves. They start to hire too much. They start to spend too much too early. That's not a good thing either.
Maybe we're so philosophically aligned because my father's longtime business partner was a Shackelford.
And, oh, really? You're kidding.
No. And they loved the doing business together. My father, Beach, him, Shackelford, their business was called BS Investments. And so they thought that was really cute.
That is, I claim that I was born with it, but that is super fun. I don't hear about that many Shackelfords.
Exactly. I was surprised to see it. I assumed you had married into it because you still use your maiden name. It looks F-O-R-S. If it had been D, that would have been even better. If it had been Melissa Ford, Shackle Ford.
That would have been a tongue twister, though, I think.
Yes. So anyway. Okay, let's jump to your book, 5-star rated on that Amazon place, not quite a year old yet. I'm obsessed with the whole idea of passion and how important it is or not, and purpose as well. I don't know what purpose is to you, so please let me know, help me with that. What is purpose?
So for me, what I think, you can have it for your organization or for yourself, but it's really, what do you stand for? And that's so important for someone to think about just in their day-to-day life. What do you stand for? What gives your life meaning? But same for your business and your brand. What do you as a brand or an organization stand for? And if you don't know what you stand for, well, that's kind of a problem. And what I've seen in my experience, especially working with a lot of different mission-driven brands or people like-minded to you that are really value that in their lives, is that they, when you really take a brand and you really know what you stand for, you make better connections with your customers, because customers today are looking for brands that they identify with. And that's how you create these long-lasting lifetime customers. And that's what, frankly, we all want.
Can you give me some examples, Melissa, of a company that we all know that has a clearly defined purpose that we can acknowledge or learn from?
So there's a couple, in the, there's some really famous ones. There's one example that I like to use a lot, and that was Dove Soap. And they're part of a huge global conglomerate, but what they did is they said they were selling their soap to women, and they had seen in the research that very small percentage of women say that they're beautiful. And what Dove did is they said, you know what, we're going to set out to make the world a better place for our customers, who are these women. And so they started this campaign. It was back in 2004, and they started using real women with no airbrushing in their advertising. They called it this Dove Real Beauty, because Dove said their mission is to make the world a better place for their customers, who are these women. And they did it, and they've done it. They've really created a movement where these days you see all kinds of advertising that is real people and ads that aren't airbrushed. And they've continued to do research along the way, because this is part of their mission. They've done research to around body image, around what is, you know, the definition of beauty. And so they put their money where their mouth is. And they're also the most successful women's soap brand in their category. So they did so much more than say that we're just going to go out and sell soap. And they've been wildly successful about it since they did that. So that's one is one of my very favorites. Another one is, I think a lot of people are aware of, Patagonia. I mean, Patagonia is out to save the planet. And with Patagonia, it's almost like the products are kind of an afterthought. It's really about their mission to save the planet. And so if you are somebody who also feels that way, and then you're going to buy Patagonia because you also want to save the planet, and you just happen to also wear Patagonia gear. And so that's another one. But you see this with mom and pop organizations all the time. I just watched this video online about it was a brewery that mostly hires people living with different disabilities. And it's just, they're walking the walk. They have people that with different disabilities. They're hiring people that have hearing loss. They're hiring people with vision loss. They're hiring people with different physical disabilities, with autism, with Down syndrome. The video was just amazing with all the things they're doing, but they're walking the walk. They're really living their mission. And their customers are the customers that are aligned and want to support them. So I feel like you don't have to be Patagonia to be a purpose-driven brand. You can be a mom and pop brewery, or you can be someone like me who started their own company and said, listen, I want to work with mission-driven brands.
All right. So how do we bake that in from day one? You know, our product unfortunately, is gizzards, right? Which are just delicious. And the bag afterwards, all the grease. Oh, how are we going to get a mission there or a purpose there? You know, we just want to sell chitlins on the side of the road.
So years ago, I worked for 3M and a spinoff of 3M, and we made floppy disks. This is going way back. So we made floppy disks and data storage tapes. It wasn't very sexy, and how are you going to find mission in that? But you know who we sold to? We sold to small businesses, mid-sized businesses, and of course, large enterprises, but they all had mission and they all had data that they needed to store. So when we think about our mission, our mission wasn't to go out and sell more floppy disks or data storage tapes. It was to help these companies grow and to be of service to them. So I think that anyone, whether you're selling gizzards, you're selling floppy disks, you're selling post-it notes, it doesn't matter. If you really think it through, when you're at the early stages with your company, you really think about what are we doing? What do we stand for? And how are we going to do more than sell products and services? Then you know what your North Star is. And that's right from a marketing perspective. I really encourage brands to think about that. So you know what your North Star is. You know what you're heading towards. And that makes all the other decisions, whether they're business decisions or marketing decisions, it makes it all so much easier. And I felt a lot of that coming through even in your Schools for Startups with your book, because you really kind of need to put a stake in the ground when you're going to start your own company.
Yes, you definitely do. Definitely. How, when you're trying to help small businesses and your clients are small businesses, most of them don't have much money. Yeah. And the last thing they need to be doing is spending it frivolously. How do you come in and deal with that issue with the business when, you know, we're hoping we can make payroll next week? You know, you know what I mean? It's hard to ask a small business for a respectable fee when that's what they had planned on spending on marketing this year.
Oh, exactly. 100%. I absolutely know the situation. And I grew up in my career at Fortune 100s.
Yeah, so working really pricing. You're going to charge that kind of level of pricing.
Yep. So I really started off working with really big companies. I had huge teams, huge budgets. And what I do now, and what really, frankly, fills my cup, is working with these more emerging companies so that they can understand all the tactics and techniques that I used when I had huge teams and huge budgets, and how do we translate that into them? And I work with them in many different ways. And I actually just talked about it this morning. Like, I love working with student founders, they can't pay me, and they're not going to be able to pay me maybe ever or maybe for a while. But it just fills my cup. I get so excited about just advising and giving suggestions to these student founders. There's other emerging businesses that, you know, when they're at a certain point in time, they only need really a sliver of someone like me. And that's where, for me, working with them on a fractional basis or an advisory basis, it's important for me to have lots of different options so that they can get some of what they need from somebody like me, but not too much of it. And I know it's part of the balance as a founder to figure out how do I not get ahead of my skis so that we're not bringing in people full time before they need. Much sense to not hire a full-time marketer until you're really, really ready. And bringing in somebody like me on a fractional or consulting basis, just for a short period of time sometimes, or just in a very, very minor advisory role, so that you still get that strategic level. And then oftentimes I'll recommend that they bring in very, very junior, kind of the cheaper labor to do some of the day-to-day, let's say, social media management. So it is truly a balance.
What percent should I be spending on marketing as a small business? Say we're going to do 500,000 this year. We're hoping to grow to 1 million or something. What percent should I be spending of that 500,000?
So the sort of the rule of thumb for bigger companies is about 5%. But when you're a young company, I think there's ways that you can even go less than that by thinking about your channels and being really creative. And a lot of it for me, in my experience, is coaching people away from saying, we're just going to do all this consumer advertising. Consumer advertising is usually way too expensive and not scalable for many young companies. Leaning over to something that is a lower customer acquisition cost, like B2B, so that you're building those relationships and making those sales that tend to be repeatable. Sometimes it's just strategies like that versus, you know, B2C versus B2B, where you don't have to spend all that marketing and advertising dollars. The other thing you can do, which is a really, I think it's just really almost elbow grease, is lean into the founder's personal brand. So how do you pitch the founder for podcasts? How do you pitch the founder for speaking at conferences? And if you're very hyper-local, how do you pitch the founder to speak at your local chamber of commerce or Rotary? There's ways to do that to leverage your people, your founder, your staff, without having to spend money on advertising until you're ready for it. So for me, that's what it's about. So kind of rule of thumb for bigger companies, spending 5% of revenue on advertising. If you're a big consumer, you're Best Buy spending way more than 5% on advertising. But for these really young companies, my recommendation usually is, how do you be super creative and not spend money or as little money as possible on advertising till you're ready?
I love that strategy. What are some of the creative ways you've heard of getting free marketing and using this strategy?
Well, doing things like joining you on the School for Startups, talking about your organization everywhere you can on every platform you can. And like I said, pitching yourself or pitching your founder on podcasts, that's a way to reach audiences you wouldn't have normally. LinkedIn is one of the best platforms if you're going from a B2B perspective. It's basically free. Yes, there's advertising opportunities on LinkedIn, but young emerging companies don't need to do that. LinkedIn, you can connect with your prospective customers. You can put thought leadership out there. It's a huge thing right now on LinkedIn to promote video. So have your founder shoot some video and put it out there. There's lots of different ways that are a little bit more in the guerrilla category, but they're really effective. And getting your founders out there at events and speaking, and if they're not comfortable with public speaking, just getting there and glad-handing prospective customers, those are opportunities that are super low cost, and it's just a lot of time and elbow grease to do that.
Yes, I love it. Also, a lot of those events, especially with the podcast, when you're on a show, you also get a link, which is great for your tech people. So double payment on that strategy. Melissa, yes, I noticed on your LinkedIn profile, very impressive. It has the panels at the top that rotate. I've not seen that before.
Yeah, you can do that if you have the one of the premium subscriptions. You can do that.
And you have to have a subscription.
Take advantage of it. You should be one who could take advantage of it, because you're kind of one of those multi-hyphenate type people. You know, you're an author, you're a host, you're a consultant. You know, you do all the things. So that, I think, is take advantage of everything you can. LinkedIn, if you have a premium subscription, will also let you do, you know, links to your website, links to your book, links to your podcast, what have you. So take advantage of all these things that you possibly can that are relatively low cost.
The lowest level is $69 a month, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's too steep for me a month, because I don't need those things most of the time. Most, I mean, like the idea of making the panels, it would just look really cool. You know? I don't really need it. You know, I don't know what I would, you know, I just don't need it, you know, but I also bought, you know, those lasers machines that project your logo down on the floor like they have at the NBA games.
Yep.
Yeah, I bought three of those for our office.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah. You know what the ROI on those are?
Maybe not a ton. Yeah. Kind of like the t-shirt that the woman gave you.
Yep.
You know, sometimes it's fun. I get that. Sometimes it's fun. And yeah, the rotating one on LinkedIn, I don't know what I get out of that. I like it. I'm a marketer, so I'm always jealous. Encouraging people to take advantage of everything. But you're right. You have to always think about every dollar you're spending. But there's a free, most of LinkedIn is free.
Yep.
And you don't have to pay for it. So take advantage of that. Take advantage of Facebook. Take advantage of Instagram, all those opportunities, because those are people out there who can learn about you and learn about your brand from a very low cost perspective.
Are you at your machine right now?
Yeah.
Go to LinkedIn and look at my profile.
I had it up earlier. Do I still have it up? Oh, no, I don't. I did have it up because I was there earlier.
What do you think of my picture?
I'm not going to criticize your picture. I think you use the same picture on your website.
I think you need to check.
Oh, no. Yours is the Lego man.
Yeah, the Lego minifigure.
Yeah. The picture on the main part of your website, I think that there's a picture like that. That's your headshot on your website.
Well, the Lego minifigure is so accurate, it even has my favorite outfit. You know,
it matches it matches your, it matches the banner photo too.
Right next to it.
Is that a real logo or is that a real Lego man or is that something you created on AI?
Oh, that's the question.
Oh.
They do have create your own Lego thing on the Lego site. It doesn't come anywhere close as this. You know, this actually looks like me.
That's amazing. And it has your red tie and everything.
Yeah. So,
That's fun.
I got playful one day and yes, it is an AI creation. I have that same minifigure at the pyramid and all sorts of stuff, you know? So
why not have some fun with it? You know,
oh, I did myself, but I wanted it to match the guy on stage there.
Yeah.
Stage. So because the outfit's the exact same. Melissa, how do we find out more? Follow you online, learn to harness our own purpose, all that, please.
So, you can go to learn more about my book, Harnessing Purpose, at harnessingpurpose.com. You can go to melissaforsshackleford.com and learn about what I do for startups and emerging businesses, as well as my public speaking. I do a lot of public speaking and keynotes, and most of them are on that website. But the easiest way to connect with me is just on LinkedIn. I love to connect with people on LinkedIn and have conversations. Melissa Fors Shackleford. And I'd love to connect with your listeners. And I tell you, it's also fun to connect with people who've read my book or seen my book. And it's oftentimes what I tell people, it's oftentimes the best business card I could have ever invented.
Yes. And to see it in a store is one of the coolest things ever.
I think, especially because you've been an author for much longer than me. I'm sure you've seen your book in many, many different places and just had that experience. I just did a keynote this week, and at the dinner before the keynote, they had my book on every single chair for the dinner. And I tell you, that was a lovely, lovely experience. I was just really jazzed about that.
I hope you got a picture of that.
You know what? I should have done a bigger macro picture, but I had a photographer for there. So hopefully she got the macro picture. I just got the small picture of the one chair. So yes, it's just, you know what? We have to celebrate our milestones.
You do. Definitely you do. Yes. Melissa, thank you so much for being with us. Great stuff. And we'd love to have you back.
Yes, Jim, this was super fun. I appreciate it. Love getting to know you. And again, big fan of your book. And I just appreciate the opportunity to chat with you and speak to your listeners.
Likewise. We are out of time, but back tomorrow. Be safe. Take care, everyone. We did it.